Welcome to Cardboard Conjecture. We're a podcast about board games where we have opinions and conclusions formed on the basis of incomplete information. This episode of Cardboard Conjecture is brought to you by these great Saskatoon businesses: Amazing Stories Comics on 8th Street, Dragon's Den Games on 8th Street, and Breakout Escape Rooms on Faithful Avenue.
Hey there, how's it going, eh? This is What You've Been Playing Wednesday, and this is a special weekly episode where a bunch of us content creators like to get together and let you know what we've been playing recently. And on this episode are The Meeple Dungeon, Mozart Games, The Cardboard Kid, Dice and Dragons, and Cardboard Conjecture. And as always, please take the time and have a look at the show notes and check out the links to the What You've Been Playing Wednesday cast. And now, get yourself something to drink, a little snack, sit back, and enjoy.
Hello, everybody. It's Rob and Anna Marie from the Meeple Dungeon.
Hello.
And we are back again recording for the What You've Been Playing Wednesdays podcast. This week we have one game to talk about. What is that game, Anna Marie?
That game is Undo, Weaving Fate Anew, Long Live the King. Designed by Lucas, Zach, and Michael Palm. Art by Foco Stries and Leah Froelich. And published by Pegasus Spiel.
Yes, Undo, Weaving Fate Anew, Long Live the King. So the actual title of the game is Long Live the King.
Long Live the King.
But it's an undo game.
Yes.
I think Weaving Fate Anew is just the extension of the name of Undo. So these are kind of in the same line as Exits and Unlocks, and these are the Undoes series from Pegasus Spiel. And this one, Long Live the King. So these are definitely in the same vein as
the Unlocks, but they're
quite a bit different. This has to do with time travel.
Yeah, and trying to change little moments in history to change the fate.
Yeah, and it's a neat little system. The theme of this one is that the king, you're in a medieval style thing. And the queen had died, and the king was holding some sort of court at the funeral for the queen, and then he's murdered at that.
Yeah, his chalice was poisoned.
Yeah, he drinks a poison chalice.
You
and he
learn
dies
all
on
of
the
this
spot.
On the back of the box, so that none
yes,
of that
it's not
is
a spoiler
it's not a spoiler
in any sense of the word, because that's the whole point of this one, is that he has died at her funeral, and you're trying to go back through time to change events that have happened. And I think how many events were there? A dozen?
There were 13. Yeah.
13 events that you can go back through and try to change. And you do so by laying out basically a card on the table that represents each one of these different time frames. And there's one from like 5 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 years ago.
A month ago.
Like 11 months ago, 6 months ago.
Yeah.
2 months ago, 3 weeks ago, and so forth, all the way leading up to his death.
Yeah.
And you're able to select 9 of these places to go to, I believe. You have 9 turns.
You have time cards. You have 9 time cards, which is like your turn markers.
Yeah.
And so you can only go to 9 of the, 13
different events.
Different events.
And you're trying to manipulate them to score points for manipulating the proper way in the right direction to try to save the queen and the king's life.
Yeah, you can make the decisions for, nothing changes, or you can change it for the better, or decisions can be made that change it for the worse.
Yeah.
So
what you'll do is basically, like, one card will say, for instance, on the castle wall 6 months ago, in the moonlight. So it tells you the kind of time of day,
gives you
and
a
what
setting,
year,
yeah.
and how long ago it was from the assassination. And you flip it over, and it's going to tell you a little paragraph about what was going on the wall at that time, and who was there, and kind of what was happening. And it's going to give you 3 options, kind of A, B, or C.
Yeah.
And you have to select one of those that you think is best.
Yeah,
to try and save their lives. Even though you're not really sure what the outcome of these are going to be, you just have to deduce hopefully using other things that you've learned from other cards that'll help you. Like, oh, that, I think this is referencing that one character that we think is something nefarious going on.
Yeah.
So we're going to try and stop him from being able to get access to the king's bedroom or things like that.
So it's, yeah, it's like the Exits and Unlocks. It is a cooperative game.
Yeah.
So the idea is to, you know, discuss the different options and try to really study the, you know, the cards and see, well, what are they actually trying to say and what do they actually mean? And, well, let's go through. If we do this, what could really be the outcomes going through A, B, and C? And then choosing. And there's a card that you choose that will tell you, kind of give you a little description on it.
Yeah. And well, you'll choose your answer, your A, B, or C, right?
Yeah.
We're going to go with B, stop the man from entering the room, right? And then you'll pick the card that says, because there's a separate deck of cards, little cards, that would say card number two, for instance.
A, B, or
A,
C.
A, B, or C, and you would take the B card or whatever it was,
and
you'd read
the
outcome
solution
from that, and you'd get a score, depending on what you chose. And it's going to say whether or not, like you said, whether or not you helped or hindered or
was
or
neutral.
Nothing.
Yeah, nothing
for
changed.
That, event.
And it's nice because there's no instruction manual in this book. There's no rule book, but in there are cards that say, okay, like when you first get the deck, it's like, stop. This is the first card. So read this. Don't look at anything. Don't shuffle it. This, they're in an order for a reason. And it kind of tells you step by step by step. So I thought they did that very well. It was very well laid out. I was never wondering, you know, what do I need to do next? It did lay that out really nicely. One nice thing with this one is we didn't actually solve it properly. Not
we
properly.
Didn't.
We didn't win.
Just short.
Yeah. So they gave you the option. Okay, you can read the solution or if you want, put it away. And come back to it a little bit later after you won't remember, like, everything and try it again.
Yeah, it recommends just putting it back on the shelf for next, you know, a bit of time, maybe a month or something, and try it again so you've kind of forgotten exactly what choices you made to do different things.
And we didn't read the solution.
No.
So we're gonna put it away and try it again
Definitely,
later.
Yeah, give it a go. Now that we kind of understand how the system works, there's also underneath each of these cards, each one of these events, is a clue. So there'd be like the document and the letter and the knife and the whatever. And you have four
clue cards
that you can exchange to,
are there magnifying
to take
glasses
a
or something?
Peek at one of these items that are found at the location that you're in. And so, yeah, you only get 9 turns and only 4 clues within those turns. So you really have to
choose wisely,
exactly. Where if you think, man, I think that knife has a lot to do with what this is, you're probably going to want to look at that. But if there's no talk of knives or whatever, it's like, maybe the knife isn't what we need to look at. Maybe it's this document or something that we need to read. So it's super neat. Quite a bit different from Exits and Unlocks.
Yeah.
And I'd say just as good, just different.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But it's definitely worth... you know, its spot on the shelf next to those
for
style
sure.
games.
And the same,
it's just cool.
The same kind of price point, like between $13 and $20 kind
of. Yeah, this one was 20-ish or 18 or
just
something.
Just under, yeah.
And, it's totally worth it. It's a great experience. Once you understand what you're trying to accomplish, it's super cool.
Yeah,
right off the bat,
we were kind of like, what are we doing here? Because we're reading the thing and trying to figure out. But after, like, I would say the first two cards, we kind of figured out.
Oh, okay, now
we
understand.
Get it.
We're not going to have all the...
It's meant to be vague.
All the information. It's supposed to be vague. And we have to try and take our best guess and use the information that we gained on our first card, move on to our second card, and try to bounce around however we can think of to deduce this, right?
Yeah.
So it's totally up to you. So you just have to look at the clues, look at the titles of the cards, look at what it might say might be there, and, you know, just kind of try and figure it out. So there's no real right or wrong answer.
No.
But I guess there's probably, you can probably go after a red herring, I'm assuming, in here somewhere. But no, it's cool. We fell just short on our first go, and I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah,
I like the theme of the...
Yeah.
Trying to stop the assassination of a king.
Definitely makes me want to go try another one just to, while we're letting this one cool off on the shelf for a little bit.
Totally. I would love to go grab another couple and just exactly if we fail at one and then go on to another one and see how we do and then maybe come back to this Long Live the King game after that.
Because I definitely enjoyed it. Like you said, I love the theme too of it.
Yeah,
it's really
cool. Highly recommend it, actually. Really, really good. But I think that's it for today. So we will see you next week. Cheers.
See ya.
Hey, everybody. My name is Chris Morris from Mozart Games, and I am back again with Cardboard Conjecture to talk about what you've been playing Wednesday. You can find me on Twitter as SpiderMo, that's Spider with a Y, if you like what you hear and want to give me a follow for some board game thoughts, my ongoing challenges as a designer, and a little bit of me complaining about random things. Now this week I would like to discuss a game that as of this recording is on Kickstarter and runs until March 8th. It's called Earth, and it's by Canadian designer Maxime Tarzit and published by Canadian publisher Inside Up Games. It's for 1 to 5 players and plays in approximately 45 to 90 minutes depending on the player count. Earth is a tableau building game and has been compared to both Wingspan and Terraforming Mars. Players will be attempting to build a tableau of environments and different species of plants by choosing one of 4 different actions each and every round. The active player will choose the action that they want to take, and all other players will then get an opportunity to follow that action, but to a lesser extent. All players then get to activate all cards that they have previously placed in their tableau that match the current action, allowing for a lot of interactivity during every player's turn. The most important action in the game is planting, where players can add cards to their tableau from their hands using soil tokens that they have accumulated in order to play those cards. Cards must be placed adjacent to previously placed cards, but diagonal also counts, so there's plenty of options when adding cards to your tableau. Players are trying to fill a 4x4 grid, so there's only so many spaces that you can add cards throughout the game, so it's very important to be mindful of where you place everything. The next action is composting, allowing players to gain additional soil tokens and also to add cards from the draw deck to their own personal compost piles. Each card in the compost pile is worth victory points at the end of the game, but they can also be used throughout the game in order to activate other abilities on cards. The watering action allows players to place plant cubes on their previously placed cards in the tableau. Again, plant cubes are worth victory points at the end of the game, but they can also be converted at any time into soil tokens when players need them, which can be very beneficial early in the game in order to get an engine going. The final of the 4 actions is called growing, and it allows players to draw cards into their hands, but also to add growth tokens to their plants that they have played. If players can grow their plants to their full potential during the game, they'll score additional victory points for those as well. Because players are able to activate these abilities during opponents' turns, there is little to no downtime in the game, as players will constantly be drawing cards, playing cards, adding and removing tokens, and converting resources throughout the game. There can be a little AP involved as players try to maximize their turns, but cards need to be activated in a specific order, so that does help keep things playing at a steady pace. At the beginning of the game, each player is dealt some double-sided cards that will give everyone some starting resources and ways that only they can score points at the end of the game, along with some actions that will boost their starting engines. Because of the huge variety of these cards, it will be very difficult to see the same starting setup twice. There's also 4 animals that will be dealt out at the beginning of the game with scoring criteria that all players will be racing each other towards, as well as 2 additional ecosystems that provide additional ways to score points at the end of the game. The amount of replayability in this game is extreme, to say the least. Now, there are a lot of icons and text to watch out for in the game, but once players get used to the cards, it shouldn't be too bad. But do expect a steep learning curve for new players. Each card that players draw into their hands can have up to about 8 different icons or different things on them, so there's a lot of information packed onto each card, not to even mention the flavor text that they'll also include. Considering that there is no hand limit, some players could get a little overwhelmed by the sheer volume of information that they are looking at during their turns. And knowing what cards to play when can take a little bit of time to sort out. There are over 280 unique cards just in the main deck, and with cards constantly being drawn, discarded, or composted, even after many repeated plays, you're going to see things that you've never noticed before. In terms of tableau building, this definitely takes the concept of Wingspan and cracks it up to 11. So I'd say that this is a game that you're not going to be casually introducing to non-gamers. Earth is going to be for experienced gamers more than anything, And those players who can min-max on the fly are probably going to be able to run away from their opponents more often than not. Also, anyone who's played this game previously is going to have a huge leg up on other new players, just by the sheer volume of information that's presented to players at the start of the game. Now, that being said, it's not an overly heavy game in the grand scheme of things, and once players start to figure out the overall gameplay, Earth has a very natural rhythm to it. Being able to convert nearly any resource throughout the game means that if you're ever short on something, there will always be a way to get the resources that you need by playing smart. Did you need a little extra dirt to add to another card to your tableau? Just remove a few plant cubes from existing cards in order to get it. Are you short on cards? Look for abilities that allow you to draw additional cards during your other actions. There's a workaround for most problems, so long as you do look for it. The artwork is very nice, with photos on every card showing close-up images of the plants, animals, or environments that they represent. When you have finished building your tableau, you can sit back and really see the story of the environment that you've created and how everything is intertwined with one another. Will you create a moist tropical paradise of ground-covering shrubs or a towering forest on a volcanic island? As a Canadian, I love the fact that many of the ecosystems represented are from our country. But that shouldn't be surprising considering that it's designed and published by fellow Canadians. However, there is a lot of representation from around the world included in the game as well. Now, if you're curious to see more about Earth, there is a mod available on TTS, and Inside Up Games are running demos of the game throughout their campaign as well. There's also been a few videos released by Quackalope and Man vs. Meeple, among others, that are viewable from the Kickstarter page. So once again, I am Chris Morris. Thank you for listening to my thoughts about Earth, which is currently on Kickstarter from Inside Up Games. If you liked what you heard from me and want to hear or see more, I can be found on Twitter as SpiderMo. Thanks again for listening, and may all your dice rolls be critical successes.
I'm the Cardboard Kid, and after a busy month of returning to reviewing over on my YouTube channel, I'm back here to talk about what I've been playing. We've played Creature Comforts, a new family release from Kids Table Board Gaming, about half a dozen times now. We've tried the short and long game, I don't like the short version, and played it with 3 and 4 people. If you're familiar with Everdell, it has a lot of similar ideas. You're a family of animals trying to gather resources and spend them on, well, different types of cards in order to score points. Some are straight points, some work as combos, and some require you to place resources directly on the card. It's lighter than Everdell, more dependent on luck, and has less player interaction. Instead of your tableau engine that largely feeds itself and your decisions, Creature Comforts has fewer cards and actions that work together. My review for this will go up in May, I think. But the quick version is this. If half of your group is age 7 to 10, check out Creature Comforts. If older and more experienced with games, Everdell is the way to go. Van Ryder Games' Final Girl is an evolved version of Hostage Negotiator. You're basically in a horror movie, trying to rescue people, gather supplies, and kill the killer before you yourself are killed. It's a hand and time management game, and super thematic. I was tense, like, the entire game. Even though this is designed for solo players, it works well as cooperative. Dad rolled dice, terribly, like usual, and I handled the cards. Mom helped coach me a bit since they had played this a few times already. They hadn't won yet, getting slaughtered by Hans in their first game and getting him down to about half health in their second. Well, I had him down to 2 health and cornered him. Unfortunately, after I hit him hard on a successful retaliation, he broke through my guard and killed me. I'd been weighing going after him earlier, but wanted to rescue people so I could unlock Lori's power-up. Maybe I should have been more aggressive earlier on. I like space, but I wasn't super interested in Space Race's theme at first. After playing it, I can say that this new release from Boardcubator is quite good. The theme and mechanisms actually fit together really well. You're going to be putting resources into the universe, drafting cards to trigger combos, and hope that your propaganda, agency advancements, projects, and actual space program itself make it further than your opponent's programs. There are a handful of mechanisms: hand management, set collection, push your luck, area majority, but again, they make sense when you're playing the game. Despite having a ton of icons and being a table hog, it's not very long. Our learning game was a little over 2 hours, but rules and whatnot were about an hour. I won, of course, and look forward to trying the other modes and variable setups soon. Three Sisters, the first release, I believe, from Motor City Gameworks, is a roll and write from Ben Pinchback and Matt Riddle. Already, that should give you an idea of how good this is. If you played Fleet, the dice game, this has a lot of similarities as to how combo happy it is, as well as how many choices you have while still having mitigation. A lot of roll and writes hit a point where it's like, well, I can't change that roll slash draw, so I guess I have to do this. Here, you're like, okay, I can work with that, but do I do this, this, or this? I have a couple of nitpicks with the graphic design, but overall, I went from thinking it was going to be light like On Tour or Harvest Dice, both good games, to being like, oh wow, I quite like this so far. That's about all for now. If you want to see photos and updates on what I'm playing, follow me on Twitter at cardboard_kid. For video reviews, check out my YouTube channel, The Cardboard Kid. Please stay safe. Happy gaming!
What up, gamers? I'm Jason from Dice and Dragons, and today I'm flying solo. We've had a little bit of a crazy week, but if you want to see some stuff that's coming up from Julie and myself on the channel, you can find us on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram at Dice and Dragons, and on Twitter at Dice and Dragon. And today, it's What You've Been Playing Wednesdays, and the game that we've had on our table for the last little bit is Batman the Animated Series Shadow of the Bat, published by IDW Games and designed by Pete Walsh and Kevin Wilson. Now, this is another entry into IDW Games' adventure system, which started with TMNT Shadows of the Past, which was a one versus many. They then turned that into TMNT Adventures, which is two games, separate big boxes, Changes Constant, and Cityfall. They now adapted it to Batman the Animated Series. So in this game, 1 to 5 players will be taking on the roles of the Bat Family, or if you did get the Kickstarter All-In version, you can also play the villains in cooperative mode. Other than that, you'd have to play the villains versus the other players as the one versus many game. You're going to be going through different scenarios that are based on episodes from the famous TV show, as you are Batman, Robin, Jim Gordon, Batgirl, even Catwoman in the base box. There's a whole lot of other characters in the Kickstarter content, as you will try to save Gotham City from the forces of evil, or you know what, maybe you're going to be trying to hit it rich as one of the villains. Now, we had some fun with this game, but Julie highlighted a point that she felt that's going to be in our review, and I wanted to bring it up here, is while we enjoyed the game, the characters feel a lot weaker than the turtles, and we do like our strong characters, which makes sense in terms of being in the Batman universe. You're not going to be necessarily hitting as hard and doing some crazy moves like you would see in TMNT. And while all the characters do feel really thematic, where you had four very strong turtles and other characters, it does feel that some of the characters are a little less balanced in this game. Both Julie and I enjoyed playing Batman and Robin, who are arguably the better characters. Jim Gordon was fun, but his role seems very much focused on sort of managing the situation, using a few ally cards and support cards to really just control what's going on and prevent villains from achieving their objectives or saving bystanders. And while Batgirl is really cool in terms of her focus and what she can do with a lot of her cards, she definitely doesn't feel like she can hit as hard or as the big swing cards like you may find from Batman. And Robin has a lot of cards that make him very good at range, with a lot of control, able to stun characters and ensure that his attacks don't weaken like they would in the rulebook. That being said about it, though, it perfectly fits the theme. The scenarios definitely remind you of the different episodes from the TV series. While the miniatures are not the most detailed, it makes sense because it is based on the animated series, so you don't have a lot of fine detail in the different characters. In terms of art, they're using stills from the TV show that are now like high res, so it works very well in terms of the theming and just brings you into the feel of the universe. Now, another issue that we found with the game, and I would say that I feel like TMNT was a little bit more refined in terms of its cooperative play, just because it started out as a one versus many and then was adapted adapted from that to be cooperative, so the missions were a little bit more refined. Some of the rules they had a little bit more time to work through in terms of making sure that it felt like challenging as a co-op. And while we did find the game fun, it felt a little easy. In the last mission that we played, we had to defeat Mr. Freeze, and the entire mission is based around him stealing some canisters to try to save his wife. For those of you that don't know his backstory, that's his whole thing. He was frozen because of experiments, and he's trying to save the love of his life. Now, in the cooperative version of this scenario, there are no rules for Mr. Freeze to go get canisters or even interact with them, so it was just a little disappointing. That being said, we only have a few rounds to stop him, so it still came down to the final round. It just didn't feel like it was the most challenging. We played very well against the AI. We were able to sort of box them in together, and it prevented the characters from even getting into attack range a lot of the time, and some good smoke pellets and a few other things let us completely obscure the characters' blocking line of sight, meaning that we were able to stay away from them and even move in and out of the smoke, defeating them. So while the game definitely captures that thematic element of Batman, especially when you can drop down through skylights and do lots of damage, which I thought was really, really cool, it does have some weaknesses in terms of being a challenging cooperative game. So you're looking for a fun game to take out, roll some dice with some friends, you're going to enjoy this, but otherwise I think you might want to pass it up. Also, there's a lot of components, so the amount of setup time for each scenario can be a little daunting, especially if you're just going to take it out, play a scenario, and put it back in the box. That being said, it plays rather quickly, so if you're looking for a fun game for an hour, you're going to want to get this to the table, especially if you're a Batman fan. So, on that note, I'm going to get out of here. Hopefully, you enjoyed this nice quick review of Batman the Animated Series, Shadow of the Bat. You're going to want to check out our full review, which will be coming out tomorrow. And with that being said, don't forget, keep playing games.
Hey everybody, this is Norm from the Cardboard Conjecture Podcast and Bridge City Board Gamers here in Saskatoon. And let's get to the Facebook page to see what the Bridge City Board Gamers community has been playing. So what you been playing? Well, Ryan has been playing lots of games of 5-Minute Dungeon, Favor of the Pharaoh, Zapotec, Mountains Out of Molehills, and Origins First Builders. Right on. He's played a lot of 5-Minute Dungeon because, you know, it's a 5-Minute game. So yeah, right on. Those sound like fantastic games. Favor of the Pharaohs has always been a dice game that has interested me, but I've never had a chance to play it. Moving on, Hands, Nova Luna, Archaeology, Terraforming Mars, Aquasphere, Yedo, On Tour. And Nova Luna, I believe that's a Feld game that I have not played yet. I'm very interested. Terraforming Mars, that's a standard. And Yedo, I believe, is a game that is a worker placement game. Sorry, John. That is very similar to Lords of Waterdeep, but it takes it in a different direction. It uses a different theme in regards to, I think it's a samurai kind of, you know, that era. I'm not going to say too much because I don't know too much about that game, but it interests me, though. Jason, Quiet Week, we played some Cribbage and Isle of Cats. Cribbage, love me some Cribbage. 15-2, 15-4, 15-6. And Isle of Cats, played the game, reviewed it. Love that game. Polyomino kind of puzzle building thing. Cribbage. That Cribbage is just a nice kind of sit down and just get cognitive with a handful of cards or get beat up by someone who's more cognitive with their handful of cards. Lane, Gloomhaven, New York Zoo, and Villainous. Gloomhaven, just had Jaws of the Lion on the table a little while ago. And the app. The app helps that table presence so much because it takes care of a lot of that setup. New York Zoo, Uwe Rosenberg, I think Capstone Games. And it is a blossoming of the idea, that whole polyomino idea that
Rosenberg has been using for a while. And to me, it's patchwork with a more elevated theme and an interesting kind of interpretation. I enjoy both of them. And New York Zoo, now that I see this, I think I might have to play it. I'm looking at it right on the shelf right now. Thank you, Lane. Villainous? Yeah, that's a that's one of those take that games that it's meant to be. Take that. So cool. Shane, some great deck builders this week, like Clank in Space and Dune Imperium and Rise of Ix. I have both. Absolutely love them. Made by the same design company and designers. But the Rise of Ix, I have not. I punched and bagged it, but I have not read to see how it integrates. But I think it's the idea of now taking the spice off the planet for maybe resources and points. Who knows? I'll have to do some homework. David, yesterday's school board game club played Splendor, Azul, King Domino, Quacks of Quedlinburg, and Dutch Blitz. Full contact Dutch Blitz. Dutch Blitz reminds me of Spoons, and I have psychological flashbacks of playing Spoons and getting broken fingers. So let's back up. Splendor, school board game club, Splendor is probably a really good introduction into that idea of engine builder. Azul, King Domino, those are fantastic introductory games to get people hooked into the hobby. Joel played Dunglion. Wordle Redo is a dungeon crawler theme. Okay, I got confused just looking at it. Eli, Unmatched, Lost Runes of Arnak and Seven Wonders Duel. Unmatched, yeah. Well, that's just the weirdest kind of like, let's take this and this and have them fight each other and see what happens. It's the weirdest spectrum of foes that you could introduce, all the way from Sasquatch versus Alice from Alice in Wonderland, right? Lost Runes of Arnak, that's that worker placement deck building, worker placement deck building game that is a lot of people talked about that one at the same time as they talked about Dune Imperium. I have both, and it's like comparing cars to trucks just because they have the same engine. No, they're totally different games, and they're both awesome. Seven Wonders Duel, not played it. I've heard lots of people say great things about it, so that's all I can say about that. Tim played some Wingspan, and speaking of awesome engine builders, yeah, Wingspan, that one has landed and made home in the hobbying world for sure. Moving on, Rebecca played some Splendor and some Seven Wonders. Nice. That sounds like just a very relaxing evening of playing. Marianne took a picture of a board that I've never seen this before, and there's no title, but it's got this sprockety cog looking thing, and it looks like it's all interrelated gizmo wise. Wow, that's very cool. If this is someone's prototype, yeah, it looks really interesting. So keep working on it. I'm intrigued. Moving on. Armand played Orléans, Colt Express, and Machikoro. Orléans. You know, I think I might have to put that on the table this Wednesday because that bag builder has not been played out of my library for a long time. So must be played. There you go. That's what the Bridge City Board Gamers community has been playing on What You Been Playing Wednesday. And I think it's my turn. And I'd like to talk about a game that Daniel and I have been playing every morning before he gets on the bus to school. And that is Ice School, designed by Brian Gomez and published by Brain Games. And here's the play on words. It's Ice School, but it's a Penguin High School. Get it? High School? Ice School? For those of my generation, the Penguins are little weebles. And what I mean by that are they are little kind of round, not round, but it's hard to describe. It's a little penguin miniature with a rounded bottom that is bottom weighted so that it wobbles. What you do is it's a flicking game. And now I'll quickly explain the game to you, but then I'll explain how we've adapted it to you know, suit our needs. But the game is played where you have little fish at the, I'll back up a bit. The box is so cool because the game is the box. You take the box out and you've got this kind of Russian nesting doll boxes within the box that you take out in a specific layout and connect them together to make the high school, the Penguin Ice School. And what it is each of these boxes is a different room in the school. And when you go from box to box, it is through the doorway or the archway from room to room. And on this archway is where you put your plastic fish that you have to go and collect and get cards. And it's basically this kind of tag game to a point where there is a stop, you accumulate your points, and you continue. And it's a fast dexterity game with, I've seen so many people develop trick shots where they are able to hit the penguin on the head to make it flip bounce over a wall. And in the rules, they say, as long as you're flicking, everything is legal. And so, that's the game of ice school. How Daniel and I have adapted it is just we've broken down the rules to the point where it's just a game of tag for us. And the timer of our game is you get a point for each fish that you can collect at each doorway. You get a card. And in the game, the cards themselves are kind of like fish cards where you have one, two, or three fish on the card, which represents kind of hidden bonus points. So that's what we do. And then at the end of it, we just kind of count up and go, okay, bus here yet? No, let's play again. And that does a very good job on keeping us entertained and interested. But as far as educated, well, there's not a lot of, you know, school learning, but there is a lot of social learning. And we're having so much fun just kind of having fun and giggling and starting out his day in that manner. So, yeah, well done. Love the game. It's Ice School, designed by Brian Gomez and published by Brain Games. I also had the chance to get on the get a game on the table that I haven't played in a while, and that is Intrepid, designed by Jeff Beck and Jeff Krause, published by Uproarious Games. And it is a cooperative, asymmetric game of surviving on the International Space Station. And it's for me, any cooperative is a solo game. So this plays 1 to 4, about 60, 90 minutes. And it is fantastic. I'm having so much fun with this game. And like I said, it's a co-op game where, you're like all good co-ops, there's about a bazillion ways to lose the game and one way to win. And same kind of schema is wrapped around this game where there's you're in space. Well, obviously, some of the ways are, if you can't produce enough of the necessary resources to survive, right, like oxygen, water, I think there's four essential resources that you need at the end of every round to establish a habitable and livable environment. And if you can't do that, then you perish. Now, the cool part is that each player gets to choose out of, now I got the Kickstarter, so there's 10 or 11 different countries that are represented as players in this International Space Station, and each one of them are absolutely different in the way that they approach the dice rolling, because this is a dice rolling game where it's where you assign dice to your modules that you are responsible for on the International Space Station. And a lot of the different countries, depending on how many different players are playing the game, are required or responsible for generating the resources necessary to keep this space station going. Now, that's great. Throw in missions, that you need to accomplish three missions, and there's a lot of missions that you can go through. So there's a lot of variability. So as this is going and you're trying to survive, you need to accomplish three missions by the end of the event deck, because once that event deck runs out, like every good co-op, that's another way that you can die, right? So, and once you start the mission, and each mission typically, we'll keep it easy, it could be that you need to draw extra power because you're fixing certain things, right? The main computer. So as well as having to draw enough power to keep all the modules going, you need to draw extra power to fix this mission. And if you've started the mission and it's like you start at level one, level two, level three, and as you're progressing, it requires more and more and more. So there is this escalation that's going on, which is anxiety, right? And you've got a time when you don't want to start a mission too early because you're still working on finishing the mission that you're on now, but you don't want to start it too late because the event deck's going to run out. So speaking of that event deck, the Kickstarter came with three or four different event structures, and within like a meteor shower, that's one of the events. You have a lot of cards to select from, like level one, level two, all the way to level four. In each level, there's probably three or four different cards. You pick you don't pick them all, so you pick a certain amount. So even in repeat plays in these events, there's some pretty cool variability, right? I am so impressed with this game. I'm impressed with what it's doing at a solo level. I can't wait to have this on the table for Gamer's Garage or Gamer's Garage and see how this plays with four people thinking or trying to problem solve differently and seeing how synergistically we can put our solutions together to, you know, not die in space. So yeah, Intrepid. That is designed by Jeff Beck and Jeff Krause and published by Uproarious Games. Well, that being said, we're at the end of this episode, and thank you so much for the content creators who come out every week and put some stuff down and let us know what they've been playing. And thank you so much for listening to what we have to say about the games and the hobby that we love. And that being said, keep your stick on the ice and take care out there, eh?